Welcome to What Are You Most Afraid Of? A series of short nonfiction audio stories. These short pieces were produced by Hampshire students in the course Poetics and Politics of Nonfiction Audio Storytelling. What Are You Most Afraid Of?
Place in the World by Ashley Monty Montgomery.
This is going to sound really bad, but I've never known what I want it to be. When I was younger, I was always trying to find something that would keep me busy. I always resented the idea of sitting behind a desk and doing something all day. I kind of feel like my ideal job has to be something where I feel useful or where I'm active. So when I was really little, I wanted to be a horseback rider. That was what I called it. I said I wanted to be a horseback rider. And that was because I felt like I would be having fun and I'd be like using my time at a desk or anything like that. that's not a job. Bless my soul for thinking it was.
I think my biggest fear, honestly, would be not finding my place in the world. And by that I mean like finding my purpose and like finding something that I like really, really love doing and like finding like a position where I could like fit into society, or maybe not fit into society, but like I don't know, doing something that like makes me happy and makes me like really excited to get up in the morning. I don't think I've found my purpose yet. I feel like I'm so passive when it comes to most things. Yeah, but if you were to ask me today, I would say I'm definitely not. I'm probably like, I don't even think I'm even halfway to figuring out what my purpose is and like what I want to do in society. I'm a senior and I don't even know what job I want to do.
Does that scare you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But right now, I think that I feel very happy when I think about photography and like taking pictures and like seeing, like presenting the world through my own type of vision. I've noticed that when I've looked back on the pictures that I've taken, I take a specific kind of photo, and it's usually like large landscapes or whatever. I generally tend to stray away from like close-ups of objects, and I really stray away from pictures of people in it. So I don't know, maybe I like feeling like I'm a small, you know, insignificant person in this like greater, like grand scheme of things.
Aidan Owens, Fear.
I have these two quotes that I live by in life, and one of them is, "The unexamined life is not worth living." That's by Aristotle. And the other is, "Curiosity killed the cat." And so I feel like when I get to the second quote, that's where things get a little bit dangerous and dicey. I think that I was always fearless, really. But now I actually think my greatest fear has always been, and still is to an extent, having my freedom taken away and not being able to have full control of my life. I had a series of sort of traumatic events happen in a very short time, and I was kind of having some sort of breakdown, and my official diagnosis is like complex PTSD. So I do think about fear a lot. I can get better. I will get better. I am getting better. But those things that happen to me will never go away. I will never be the same person I was. It's impossible to be that person again, even if I wanted to. I've been really angry about it for a really long time. And I'm only getting to the point now of trying to embrace it a little bit more, trying to figure out ways to integrate it or incorporate it in a way that makes sense with myself. It's our life experiences that like build our relationship with our fear. I think it's just like really illuminated a lot about not only my life but about other people. Fear is a universal feeling, hopes and fears. So I think in a way like fear has also been a way to really connect me with other people.
Creepy Crawly by Gabe Ross.
Anything small and like flying that tries to attack me, I hate them. Like, for example, I'm just like riding on the bicycle and they like, you know, they try to get inside a hole. Like, that's their, like, I don't know what it's called, but they want to get inside the holes. So like they try to attack your like eye, like a pupil, or like your nose or stuff like that. I just like scream and jump and like run out of the room. I think I'm just, in general, I'm a kind of person who's not scared of a lot of things. I mean, like, death comes, you know, naturally, and that's what it is. Like, that's what life is about. When I think of something that's scary, I think about something that gives me, like, goosebumps, or just feeling of, you know, instant, like, fear in that moment in daily lives. Because the thing is, like, why I'm scared of bugs, not just because they attack me and they're like, you know, hard to like see, stuff like that, but also the looks, like they have like many legs and they have different parts, the way they move, it's like, you know, they all move separately. That movement is like so scary. One of the worst nightmares that I had in my life, like when I was younger, or like I still do sometimes, is that like just bugs are approaching me and like my bed is full of bugs, something like that. It's just like that visual is like stuck in my head, and it's so, I don't know, just creeps me out. And I know it's kind of ridiculous because they're so tiny and like I can kill them easily. You don't see them coming, you know. That's the scariest part. Because we use so much chemical against them, now they're getting tougher and tougher. Imagine the world that's taken over by cockroaches in the future. It's very possible, you know. They're so strong. If they get bigger, it's impossible to kill them.
Look at My Hand by Iona Pearl Reed Eaton.
Look at my hand. Is that rational? My entire life is spent obsessing about ridiculous, nonsensical things that I don't need to obsess about, whether it be contamination that isn't there, or if it's just obsessing about a thought that bothered me and I have a hard time letting it go. And the thing with OCD is I fear not being able to stop obsessing about it, which makes me more stuck in it. But it is all irrational. If it were rational, it wouldn't be a disorder. It wouldn't be a problem. And that's the thing. My emotional reactions are overblown, and so they manifest in obsessing and, in cases, compulsing to stop obsessing. I mean, I knew I had OCD since I was diagnosed in, like, fourth, fifth grade. And it was mostly about, like, hand-washing stuff at the time. Maybe end of 12th grade, beginning of freshman year of college. I think as I started to get a more sophisticated sense of the world, I started to notice that, like, I'm clearly going about certain things differently than people that don't have OCD, and specifically my particular OCD, because it can be a lot of different things, not just hand washing. I kind of think that it was the first time, the beginning of me starting to like use substances, like getting drunk with friends or smoking weed, because it would put me in a place where I could kind of gain perspective. Particularly the first few times I engaged in those activities, I could see that there was a diversity of cognitive styles, because I was so rigidly stuck in my head that once I was able like to get high for the first time. I was able to kind of see and fathom different cognitive styles, I think. That's when I realized. That was probably the key moment. I'm constantly engaging in a mental battle while engaging in the outside world and such. So it's not that I'm scared to death all the time. It's not that, like, fear in the generic general sense. But it is kind of scary to go out and go day to day because I'm always worried about a strong obsessive thought monopolizing my day instead of me engaging in the world.
Clara's Worst Fear by Emma Leff.
When I was like 13, my aunt killed herself. I guess the main things that you need to know about her is that she had red hair and she always wore red cowboy boots. And she was like a punk rocker and she like really didn't care. Like she would just kick people's asses. It was really funny. And just like she just spoke her mind all the time. And she could talk to ghosts. Mm-hmm. She was my first violin teacher, actually. Mm-hmm. And she really loved us a lot. Yeah. And, like, we really loved her, too. So I saw her twice that year, which is actually more than usual. Mm. And I actually found out that the reason why I saw her twice in 1 year was because my mom knew that she was going to die. Wow. But she didn't tell me. In July, I was like, okay, well, like, I'll see you next time, because, like, I was planning on seeing, she was saying, oh, maybe I'll come down in November to Austin, yeah. And so I was like, yeah, I'll see her in November, cool, like, bye, and then I never saw her again. I guess my biggest fear that's immediate and that happens, that I feel almost every day, is just thinking about, oh, like, what if I never see them again? Like, every time somebody, I leave somebody or something, even if it's just like, oh, like, you're going to the gym. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, what if something happens on the way to the gym and then they, like, she's just going to die. This is, like, the last time I'll ever see her. I actually think that with my fear of people that I know dying before I see them next time, in my head, they always commit suicide.
I Want to Make Somebody's History by Anita Fuentes.
My greatest fear is going through life and not making something that matters before I die. Well, I'm definitely not ready to die. I have a lot of things I need to do before I die. I grew up with just my dad as an only child, and he has always had extremely high expectations of me. Often, I would say, unrealistically high expectations. At this point in my life, my expectations of myself are at least as high as his of me. So, I'm no longer fearful of disappointing him. I am the person that I am trying to impress, and I hold myself to a high standard to the point that I'm often disappointed in myself, but I think it's a healthy disappointment because it pushes me to improve until I'm satisfied. I wouldn't say that I'm a perfectionist, but I have very high expectations for everything that I do, and maybe that's the attitude that informs some of my pessimism at the moment. I'm a teacher in a middle school in Springfield. I teach 60 seventh graders, and I went into it with the goal of changing their lives for the better. Those students are in such need of great educators, and the further they go along in the educational system, the farther behind they fall. The only thing I'm scared for is that they continue down the road that they're on, because in those cases, they won't have the education and skills necessary to have a successful life, and they won't have the soft skills necessary to be effective in the workplace or in any other professional setting. So everything that they fail to take seriously really just ends up hurting them, and I try to help them see that they're in control of their own future, and I'm here just to give them the tools necessary. So I would say that is a fear that I have in terms of the consequences, but it's a fear that I'm not convinced I can't. I'm too tired to form a sentence right now, but I'm pretty sure that I can make it work for these students. I want to make somebody's history.
Upon Unraveling the Spool by Flannery Rollins.
Afraid of being let down. I don't know, I don't like to think about it. Sort of like operate under this narrative that I need to stay in control, or that I'm afraid of opening up myself up to situations where, for whatever reason, like other people hold the power.
What makes you feel in control?
Like being able to like set an alarm and like get out of bed. Making a list for myself of like, okay, I want to get these three things done today. It's just like very comforting to my brain. I think I have a tendency to just sort of shut down. I do this thing a lot where I'm like present. I seem very present on the outside, but I don't know, I don't like to think about it. Try to be present with people and with myself, I think.
A A Life Worth Living by Grant Holub-Mormon.
If someone that I knew and, you know, loved had gotten to the point where I need to be making those decisions, that's probably, like, I'd probably be too far. But I hope I would have the clarity of mind, you know, not get so clouded by, you know, my connection to him and wanting to keep him around.
When is a life worth living already over? I'm Grant Holub-Mormon, and I'm speaking to David Porter, a third year at Hampshire College.
My greatest fear is dying slowly in the medical establishment, that, you know, the sort of death where everything starts to break down and you get sicker and sicker, and, you know, reasonably at some point you should have just died a long time ago. You have all these machines hooked up to you just keeping you technically alive, but you barely know what's going on. You can barely do anything. And so you just sort of wither for years and years like that. It just feels like an awful thing. It's like the idea that that could be how my life goes out. You know, whatever I do in my life, then there's these years appended to it that are just misery, you know? I think that if it's gotten to a point where it's not a personal choice of the person who's, you know, going through all the treatment, that, I mean, there's no sense in dragging it out like that, because I don't think that's a life worth living, really, if you're that out of it.
Can you talk about maybe the process that you would go through if you had to make that decision for someone else?
Oh man, I never considered that. I would hope that I would be able to see clearly enough that if someone that I knew and, you know, loved had gotten to the point where I need to be making those decisions, that's probably, like, I'd probably be too far. But I hope I would have the clarity of mind, you know, not get so clouded by, you know, my connection to him and wanting to keep him around. I hope I'd be able to see that it was too far. You know, humane thing would just be to end it. But I can't say for sure that I'd be able to do that. I think that once people sort of reach a certain level of maturity, if they want out, they should be allowed out. A sort of good benchmark is if you're old enough to run for president, you are old enough to know if you want to keep living. If, you know, there's all those systems and still, like, someone who's of sound mind and has had, you know, has had time to think about it, you know, it's like, no, I'm not into this. You know, they should be able to get out of it.
Greatest Fear, Adagio by Maggie Wyler.
I feel most safe probably in the house that I grew up in. you know, when they're there and the dogs and my family and there's a fire. It's super nice. I love, like, being outside. Like today with the sun. Because, of course, you can always think about, like, oh, what if this happens or what if this person dies. But the reality is like, everyone will die. I think I've always had anxiety, but it was like probably in the past year that it was getting like out of hand and becoming like more obsessive. Like, for instance, I'd be in like ballet rehearsal, and instead of like just being in the moment, like I could only think about like, what if I have this disease? And of course, you're like, this is so irrational, but it's like, what if I would be the one person for this to happen to? And then you just like get into this cycle of thinking, okay, I have it. Now what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to live my life? It's like paralyzing, so you can't focus on anything else. Like, I'd be going to bed and Lot, my girlfriend, I'd be like to her, oh, like, what if I have this disease? And she'd be like, no, it's okay, and like comforting. And I feel like I feel like as it progressed, maybe it would have been better just to be like, you're being ridiculous, instead of like so comforting. I mean, I guess it's like, there's like, death is my overall fear. Probably death. And like losing people that I love. It's like the suffering. Both my maternal grandparents died. My grandfather in 08 and then my grandmother 2012. And I was close to both of them. And then my girlfriend's dad passed away this last September. So that was like very difficult.
Homeless by Eli Salas Kleiner.
Biggest fear to me is probably being homeless. So that's probably my biggest fear. Now that I'm living it, I can speak on that behalf of homelessness and drug addiction. Really. When I'm going through right now. So, my biggest fear is coming true. I don't know why I'm here. I mean, I've always come from a home, well, family. And later in life, I decided, you know, I guess I got bored with life and had my own little problems with addictions, which most of them start at a doctor's office. And when they leave you hanging with no substitutes or knowing about addiction, I've never been addicted in my life. It leads down to a path of bad news, but they gotta understand, by locking someone up that has an addiction to begin with, it only makes things worse. It doesn't better the person. You know, they need more resources, for sure. I just feel there's an injustice there when, you know, most of my salary went to pay for some of these services, and seeing that a lot of the services aren't being used for the people that need it makes me upset. You know, these are women in pretty desperate situations, and I just don't think their rights have been being met, and no one will ever know because they're locked in a cell where no one can hear them. I mean, what happened to humanity? You know, these are people that made mistakes, and it's not good. You know, so I see a lot of problems in the justice system as I'm going through it. And those are things I may focus on when I get through this to make a change and to get maybe people, other inmates' voices. So dealing with that now is a challenge. But I know getting through it, there must be some positive things to come out of it. And hopefully if I can make a change by going through this experience, I can help someone else or change, not even just laws, but just change the environment and just to let people be aware of things that they don't like to talk about. And homelessness and drug addiction seems to be two of them. I mean, there's so many things in life we could be doing. Now, you don't realize it till you get into something like this, where you lose your freedom, then you really appreciate freedom, but makes you think, well, if I get through this, I know what I'll do next, and it's not going to be going down this path. It'll be a different adventure. Maybe I'll learn more things along the way, I'm sure. So that's my biggest fear, and now I'm living the fear. So those are some things that I've learned from going through some negativity in my life that I brought upon myself, but didn't realize the seriousness of it until now. You know, when you see things that need to be fixed, it's frustrating because there's so many things to do. It's like, fuck, where do you start? But it starts with one voice, you know? And before you know it, you know, you can make a change. It takes time, it's a lot of frustration, but it's worth it. So that's what I'm gonna do.
Liz Isn't Dead by Jesse Moon.
Most afraid of, I guess maybe losing my dad or my brother. Or going to prison. After like my dad went to the hospital, I was like, whoa, like, could very easily happen. Or like my brother lives in California where there are like earthquakes and like forest fires and like a bunch of shit going on. When things go as horribly as they possibly can, like it's never gonna be as bad as you think it's going to be. Like, humans are pretty, like, resilient most of the time. I feel like I could survive through anything, but it'd be hard, yeah. I feel like the fear of it is, like, almost just as bad. Or if it was, like, yeah, like, the fear of someone close to me dying is probably, like, just as like agonizing and painful as like if they actually did die.
Do you ever make up eulogies for your loved ones in your head?
Yeah, I mean, I think eulogies are so wonderful to write, and I wrote my mom's eulogy, and it was like such a intense and like loving process for me that I feel like just doing that is like a little like exercise or something, just to like try to like remind yourself why you like love someone so much. I feel like what eulogies are is like what they're like designed to be is like the essence of someone. So like when all their bullshit doesn't matter anymore and like all their like shitty aspects of them or boring aspects, like that is like completely, you know, like that died with them, and then like the only thing left is like what they like, who they really were, and like that put into a eulogy is like the best way to end someone's like life, or like, you know, come to a close of with someone that you know or did know.
Layla's Worries by Casey Owen. Like, I'm someone that like wants to know people really well. I think I haven't had that many relationships with people that felt like I felt really
truly connected with them. And, like, never being able to do that. Being stuck in situations that are just me isolated in my head. It's really just this past week and a half since we've gotten here. And, like, it's hard for me to have kind of surface-level relationships with people. And those make me kind of feel unsettled. That unsettling making me feel disconnected from myself. If, like, there's no coherence there, feeling, like, almost impossible to have that coherence with people outside of my own body. Definitely scared of, like, getting in long periods of that. I mean, maybe it's more like fear of not feeling connected with myself that manifests in not feeling connected with other people. But that's super ungrounding to just be like, without having any like sense. And I think it's really easy here to like really detach from yourself, a lot easier than in other places. Re-entering this world, that makes me feel pretty unsettled in a lot of ways, I think. Questioning myself, what is it all about? What's this about? Why? Thoughts of like, oh, it could be better, instead of just like being present in what I have now, which is good.
Fears Buried by Malik Ford.
It's like being buried alive is the feeling. And, you know, that is just the most out of horror of horrors. But I'm a iconoclast.
Oh. Well, would you consider yourself that, or have other people said that? Or
I think both. I think people have told me that about me, and I think that about myself a little bit. An iconoclast is somebody who really is kind of, I guess, you know, an explorer, you know, somebody who's not really tied down to any dogmas. I never have been. I think that that's really a remarkable two-edged sword in my life, is having been that free. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful way to have lived.
So tell me, what are you most afraid of?
Well, I never thought I had phobias, but the fact is that I have two phobias. I think that the dominant phobia of the two that I possess, one is a fear of heights. I don't even know what the scientific name is, but I can be very, very high on an airplane, I'm not afraid, but if I'm standing like on a balcony and I can look down, it's pretty terrifying. But for me, the real problem I have is with very tight, closed spaces, claustrophobia. I do know the name to that one. I think as a child, my brother locked me in this thing, and I remember that I was locked in this dark space for a couple hours until my mom found me and opened and let me out. And ever since then, like right now, I just got back from Europe and they have these tiny two-person elevators, and I won't go in it. I won't go in just out of the idea that it could stop. I would just lose it. So I'm terrified of not having freedom of movement, I guess is really what it comes down to. Not so much a space, but not having the freedom to decide when it ends, you know?
It's the fear of not being able to move, not being able to decide, you know, where your body goes or travels.
Yeah, there's a definite correlation with the concept of the idea of being buried alive. Like being in a coffin, my greatest nightmare would be to wake up that somebody had given me smelling salts or something and put me in a coffin and buried me alive, and then I wake up and I'm in the coffin. You know, that is just the most out of horror of horrors. It's like being buried alive is the feeling, and that's my fear.
What is Caitlin most afraid of? By Tova Sterling.
I think I'm most afraid of being alone and not having a system of people I can rely on. In high school, I didn't really make friends well at my school. I only had like 3 good friends for the first 3 years that I met through cross country, because that's where I spent most of my time, well, outside of like a school setting, and they were my best friends. Then one day they all just started texting me and telling me that I was doing things wrong, and they were annoyed at me and they needed space from me, and it was out of nowhere. They started to just like totally distance themselves. And I had cross country with them every day. I just didn't have my people anymore. Also realizing that, you know, people that you think are your people aren't your people is really scary, because then it just forces you to question yourself. And I don't, like, when I love, I feel like it's unconditional. I feel like I'm not going to stop loving this person just because they're growing and developing as a person. And so I thought that I was changing into a better person, but I guess I wasn't changing into the person they saw as a better person. I guess that's what I'm most afraid of, because, you know, people change and I've changed so much, but I don't want to become someone that people don't love anymore.
What are you most afraid of? What are you most afraid of?